Thank you so much to our new Patreon subscribers, Christopher Irwin, Ryan Norris, Heather Morphew, Forrest, B37, Four Books, Jacob Clark, Tabs, Abby Mabon, Sarah Reads 2, and Lynn Frizz Lisby. We have two upgrades, Sylvia Jamorska from Squire to Warrior, and Matilda Burke-L, also from Squire to Warrior. So thank you so much for your time as a Squire, and welcome to the Warrior class. We really appreciate it. You all are the legend to our latte. Hello, and welcome to Book Reviews Kill, a podcast about fantasy, sci-fi, and horror novels. I'm Chad.
And I'm Evan.
And you are listening to the Monday Morning Minute.
And this week in fictional news, the Game of Thrones spinoff, Jon Snow, that series is no longer in development at HBO, which that's probably fine, right?
It became a Jon No.
Wow, hilarious. So apparently, according to Kit Harington, who I think was working on it, it was like in development kind of with one of his friends, I think. They said that, quote, we couldn't find the right story to tell, which, like, yeah.
I mean, yeah, like, because there wasn't one written.
Yeah, like... I don't know. Like, when I first heard about that, I was just kind of like, really? Like, we ended it at a pretty decent spot, actually. He just, you know, is up there gallivanting with Snow and the wildlings and stuff. It's like where he wanted to be. And I remember when that was being kind of floated around the internet, I was like, what are they gonna do? Like, what could possibly be like, oh, they're trying to get over the wall again. I don't know, like, what like, what could they possibly do?
I remember you not being very excited about it.
Yeah, not really, because I mean, I would still watch it, obviously.
Totally. I think we kind of differ in the way that if there's content that I love, like a world that I love, even if it's kind of bad, I'm like, well, at least that's kind of a cool, like, it was pretty at least, you know. But if you're like, no, man, it like ruined the thing before it, or it just puts you a bad taste in your mouth, which I totally understand. And I think as my tastes mature, I'll probably come to your side of things pretty quick here.
I think it's cool that they were just like, it probably wouldn't be very good, so let's just not do it, you know. It
shows,
like,
maturity.
I'm like, really, I really respect that decision, honestly, because I mean, if they did have the story, then that's one thing. But if they're just kind of like, what are we supposed to do? Like, I don't know, I guess we could just kind of have him have something go wrong and he has to figure it out.
Right. With the wall or something. They're like, well, let's see. When we didn't have a book to follow, how did we do?
They are doing Night of the Seven Kingdoms, though, which, dear listener, if you haven't read that, you definitely, definitely should. The audiobook is done by the actor who played Viserys, who, not in the House of the Dragon, but Daenerys' brother in season one of Game of Thrones. And he is a fantastic audiobook narrator. I think he should do way more stuff for audiobooks. But yeah, Night of the Seven Kingdoms is three novellas, I think. And then I think that they're doing the first one, at least. I'm not sure exactly what the details are on that, but I'd be really excited to watch that. I think it takes place between it's like right after the Blackfyre Rebellion and right before the events of Game of Thrones. I'm pretty sure it's like in that area there, but I'm not like super well versed on my Game of Thrones lore.
I wonder how we got the rights.
Kit Harington?
Asking nicely.
Oh, no, he didn't. George R. R. Martin wrote Night of the Seven Kingdoms.
No, to write the book that's in the world that he didn't, you know, start.
Yeah. No, that's not Kit Harington.
But oh, got it. I was confused. Okay. Yeah, I was like, really? Huh. Wonder how he did that, and it's not fan fiction.
But it is very, very good. I would definitely recommend it to anybody that's like, I want to go back to Westeros. It's not as, like, exciting as Game of Thrones, you know what I mean? But it is really cool. It's very, very good.
I love the three novella format. Yeah, like that's Binti. Really awesome. We did that with Binti, and I was like, I could do more with this format. And I think that maybe shows, and maybe this is just me kind of being a little rude, but perhaps it shows a little bit of like maturity when it comes to George R.R. Martin and like self-awareness, right? He's like, well, if I bite off a lot, I might just not finish it, you know? So he's like, let's shorten the format and then I'll get her done.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. Because he did like a big book about the Targaryens and all the history with that. I would really like to see what happens with the end of that series. But whatever, it's fine. I'm done barking up that tree.
I have a question for you and all of, actually, in the Discord. Please let me know what your thoughts on this, because it's important to me personally, because I would love to be a audiobook reader. There's a new option, especially if you go through, I think it's only on Amazon. My father was telling me about it because he's an author, and there's an option that just says like convert to audiobook. And I was like, did they use a real person? And he's like, I don't know, but it did have it ready for me in like 2 hours. And I was like, well, definitely not a real person then. And he's like, it's really good. And I was like, man, that kind of sucks. What are your thoughts on that? Is that, do you think
the AI audiobooks?
Yeah. Do you think that people will be okay with that, or they'll still go out of their way to find a real person because they like the art form?
I mean, this is opening a floodgate to a gigantic conversation. But if we can keep it in the realm of audiobooks specifically, I mean, I think that I understand on the one hand, I guess, like publishers trying to make money and keep their money or whatever. But
I mean, it's easy.
But I don't know, man, the human touch to it. Most books are about deep emotions and deep like inner dialogue and stuff, or like dynamic conversations and dynamic thoughts and stuff.
Self-expression and growth.
I'm not saying that AI eventually won't get there. I think maybe it probably will. But I think like, right now, I'm leaving it to humans to read human written things makes the most sense for me personally. Now, that being said, I don't know if I would 100% be able to tell the difference if I was in like a blind study, because some of it's really, really good.
My father said it was really good.
On principle, I would say it's a job that's just as artistic as writing books. It's just as artistic as painting or anything like that. There's a performance aspect to it. So we should keep it to humans. And man, what a wild conversation that is.
I couldn't agree more. My question wasn't so much like, do you think that it's going to be as good? Because obviously getting there fast, if not there already. More of just like, do you think that it's worth it to keep it with humans, or is it fine to not? And I, you know, any sort of art, I really prefer my art from not a AI. You know, AI is not going to be able to self-express in any way. It's only going to be able to mimic it well.
Until you program it to not just mimic it.
Yes, it may not change the experience. Like, it might pass the Turing test.
Yeah.
But like, you know, it's not feeling anything. And I think that there will be a little bit of soul that is lost maybe there, you know?
Yeah, I don't know.
Not to mention the jobs.
I think that if an author was like, yeah, do it, like whatever, like if they, you know, if it was like a self-published author that didn't want to take up the expense or something like that, then I can totally see like why somebody might choose that option if it was like way cheaper to do it like that as an independent author. But maybe going down the road, maybe like these big five publishers and stuff just kind of like have some kind of clause or something that's like, no, we hire them out, you know, because like I know that a lot of independent authors would probably use AI art if it meant, you know, that they can save some money and they didn't have to hire out for art or anything like that, at least for a couple of the first books or whatever, mm-hmm. or whatever, you know. I can see why, for one thing, tempting, because some AI art looks really good. I don't subscribe to the notion that like all AI art is terrible. I've seen some really awesome AI art that looks
amazing.
Pretty cool. But so yeah, like if you're an independent author and you just want to get the story out and you want a cool cover, I can totally understand having an AI cover or getting an AI to record the audiobook. But if you're a big, like, you know, big five publisher, and you should keep that art alive, you know. But unfortunately, I feel like like most they're corporate.
The bottom line, you know, some people are swimming in their Scrooge McDuck gold, you know, basement, not really caring about self-expression. But I think you actually really nailed it in a larger way than you know when you answered your question, which was the freedom of to do what you want to do with your art. Like, if you want to choose to use AI, do it. Though you might have to suffer the consequences of some of your readers being a little annoyed with you.
I don't know. Like, I have different opinions. Like, I just kind of like go back and forth sometimes, because also, I mean, I think there's something to be said for like doing as much as you can to like keep that corner of the artistic industry like up as a fellow artist, you know what I mean? So it's like, mm-hmm. I think that there's a certain, there is something just kind of weird about like doing AI art when there are artists out there, but also you got to pay for people to actually put their time into doing stuff. And if you don't have any money, then like, but you still want a cool cover, it's like, I feel you. And you know what I mean? Like, it's
totally. Which is why your answer was so wise, which is to default to freedom of choice is never really the wrong path. And I think, you know, if you ask me what I thought about, if you ask me what I thought about, like, you know, horse buggy drivers and losing their jobs when the car came out, I'd be like, progress needs to happen though. And I think why that's not a hypocritic thing is one's about art and self-expression and the other one's just like a process, you know. Unless we think horse driving a carriage is art, which I don't know. It's so,
I think it depends on the
industry. I don't
want to
get too
man.
Deep
like,
and
yeah,
weird with
it's,
it.
It's like, yeah, if we wanted to keep this going, I mean, like, I think that.
And it's hard to separate myself from it too.
Yeah,
you know?
I mean, like, I don't really waffle that much on it. I think that if we are going to have a lot of industry be taken over by artificial intelligence, that we need to start having much bigger government safety nets to back those up, because it's going to be really difficult to adjust to. Because it's like with the horse and buggy like conversation, it's like, yes, that seems analogous, but then it's like, it's not the same thing, because that was one industry, not 50 of them at the same time, you know what I mean? So it's like
500.
It's like you're I'm not saying that you had a bad example, but I've heard that example of before from people, and they're just like, well, this totally, they adapted it. It's like, yeah, in the 20s when it wasn't like robots doing everything.
And also, like, there's an argument to be said for the horse and buggy carriage thing, like, well, historically, and this is true, when technology brings about a change in an industry, it almost always, historically anyway, brings about more jobs than it removes. Like the car manufacturer, so many more jobs, but with AI, it's not it's the same. Not it's not just horse drive. It's like, all
if
artistic,
like one computer can literally do the job of 1,000 people.
Write song,
like
that, you could write the story.
Yeah, you can write stories. I think Brandon Sanderson actually, I didn't listen to the interview, but I saw the headline, with, as you know, irresponsible news readers tend to do. But I saw the headline, and it seemed like Brandon Sanderson had kind of been of the opinion that, like, yeah, you know, like that's going to be a thing. People are going to, there's going to be AI stories for sure.
I bet you many of the KDP books right now are mostly written by AI.
I wonder where we're going to go.
KDP is Amazon's print on demand service, by the way, if you guys don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't see why you wouldn't want to just keep putting the effort in for humans to keep making the art. I mean, it's for humans, so I don't.
Totally. Like I get labor-saving devices, but like at the same time, this isn't a labor. We're not harvesting
crops. You
have to pinch
pennies so that there's no soul in art anymore. Like, come on, you guys.
Well, I mean, you know, because of farming practices, sure, we have the population of our world that we have. We wouldn't if we weren't able to industrialize some of those. Well,
and then there's like medical applications to it and stuff, obviously. Like there's always two sides to everything, but I feel like with art specifically, it's like, we're just gonna pinch pennies. We gotta save that extra. Like it's just
place. And it's such a bastion of like therapeutic. Like I know when I write songs even write stories, like it's therapeutic for me to do that, and it's also really cool that other people can read it, or I could make a buck from it. You know, so it's great for everybody.
What if the AI was like, it's so therapeutic for me to do this?
Dude, the AI, man, I'm a humanist. Oh, I'm for humans.
What a wild time we live in to be having these conversations in earnest. Like it feels like sci-fi, but it's like, no, this is going on right now. Like these are real conversations we have to have.
We'll wrap this conversation with this question. If you were in high school, do you think that you would be using AI?
Absolutely, 100,000%. Oh my god. Totally.
I'd be using a different AI to reorganize it so it doesn't like fall into the algorithm or whatever.
There's no possible way I wouldn't be. And if you're in high school, you're listening to this right now, more power to you. It's like when our teachers were like, don't use Wikipedia. It's a bad, it's terrible. It's like, really?
Totally.
I'm pretty sure I've gotten answers right every time with
it's
Wikipedia.
It's like, why would I use the handsaw when the Sawzall is available? You know, it's like, I can do this in half the time. In fact, there's something to be said for like teaching them that actually that is efficient for them. Like I don't think for writing, but for like solving your math problem and like showing your work, it's like, why would I do that? I have a calculator in my phone, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I can see, again, I know it sounds like I'm waffling on this, but like I can totally see the other side of it where it's just like, it's like I rely on GPS for like literally everything. I can't like figure out how to get across town without it, you know what I mean? So it's like, I understand that, like
the great analogy.
I mean, really though, I mean, it is, there is like that kind of like, okay, but if you just go straight to the answer, you don't know why it is like that, then
right if you have access to everything, then you kind of know nothing, and then you can't use it.
It's also weird though, I mean, like a lot of it's like busy work, and a lot of it's just like,
totally,
you know, so I can understand it's like, I already know this, so I'm just gonna have AI do it. And
I don't know the way that's better.
I don't know either
than what we're doing, but I know that it's not great. Like I know that we've worked our way to a place that it's like not super awesome.
But like that toothpaste is already out of the tube, man. Like and they're like, we have software that can detect AI. And it's like, okay, well they invented software that can detect AI. So
right, it reorganizes it or something. Like, you know, it's like, man,
it can do homework for kids. They're gonna figure out a way to do it. Actually, we do have a lot of teachers in the audience. I'd love to hear your guys' opinions on that.
Yeah, but continue this conversation in the Discord, guys, because I would really love to hear your opinion on that. And, you know, we didn't even define our terms, right? What is art is something we need to define before we can really have this conversation, but I'm not trying to have that right now because we could go back and forth.
It could be like a three-hour-long conversation.
Totally, because, like, anyway, we won't have the conversation. Before we go on to the weeks here, We got to give a little rest in peace to Bernard Hill, the actor who played Theoden in Lord of the Rings.
You know, made it to 79. It's a good run. Did some really amazing things.
It's a good run.
Played.
I'll be happy if I reach 79.
Theoden, he absolutely crushed that role.
Crushed
that speech
it.
Before the Ride of the Rohirrim. Amazing. Incredible.
I will never forget the feeling in my soul when I was sitting in the theater and the Rohirrim that are like 30 deep horse come up over the hill. Oh, took my breath. It literally took my breath away. And that's like something we say often, but don't actually literally have happen. Like I'm weak in the knees. Like how many times have you literally been weak in the knees? You know, not many. That actually took my breath away.
Hell yeah.
Go Theoden. Anyway, tell me about your week. What have you been up to?
Oh man. Writing. I feel like, man, like I'm a book influencer. That's my whole thing. And definitely not reading as much as I would like to be. Writing a lot, though, man. Like my minimum word count per day has been 3,000 words. Like,
wow, do you keep track?
Yeah, I mean, like I don't write it down or anything, but I'm definitely going at a pretty good clip. I wrote 6,500 words today.
What's your warm-up process before you do? You just sit down and smash or like tell me about how you get there?
Sometimes I'll read like before I write or I'll like listen to an audiobook or something or go on a walk, but like I don't do any like exercises, like writing exercises or anything. I just start hammering out the keys.
I like the reading thing though, get you and kind of inspire you. It'll be hard to stop.
Yeah, that's what I've been doing, man. Like, I mean, just I'm trying to get the rough draft for the second book, the sequel to Angie Kills the King. I'm trying to get the rough draft done before I get my edits back from tour, which will be pretty soon. I just talked to my editor a couple days ago. Those edits are almost done.
Cool sentence.
Yeah. Just talk to my editor. Stephanie, if you're listening to this, you're amazing. But yeah, I'm trying to get this rough draft done.
I'm not just saying that either. Behind the podcast, he says that to me. So
yeah, the rough draft is definitely rough. I mean, there are definitely pockets of it where I'm like, nice, this is pretty clean. Like, all right. And there's other parts of it where I'm just like, this is such a mess. Like, this is so dumb and bad. And I don't like any of this. But then it's funny because, the more I push through and like I get to another scene, I'm like, oh, that one's pretty good. So then I've got like a bad part, like a bad like 10 or 15 pages that I'm not super proud of, that's like sandwiched in between the other 10 or 15 pages on either side that I'm like pretty okay with. So I trust the process, and I have until I think February 2025 to get the final in. So
the final,
yeah,
okay.
So I have like 9 months.
That's cool.
It's not a lot of time to write a sequel to a book.
I can tell your growth as an author simply by the fact that you now say this was good, because before you were just so self-deprecating, which is, you know, fine to be, and it probably wasn't all bad, probably wasn't all good, but some of it definitely was. Yeah. And you would say all of it's bad, and now you're like, you know what's good and bad because you've done it so much, which is a really cool like measurement of your growth, you know.
Yeah I mean, there's definitely parts where I'm like, that'll work. You know, I'm not like, this is amazing, everyone's going to cry, but I'm just like, that's good right there the way it is. And we'll make it a little bit better. But
you'll always be your harshest critic.
Yeah, I will forever. And
that's healthy to an extent.
I don't know. It kind of hurts a little bit.
When you final question, you can tell me what you've read.
Sure.
When you start a book totally fresh, now that you've got some experience under your belt, a whole book done for the most part, when you start a new book, knowing what you know and the process that was kind of chaotic writing the first one, what's the first thing that you do? Like your outline, like what does that look like? Is that chapters?
I just do like a bullet point list of like, this happens and then this happens, but then this happens. And because of that, this happens, and then this happens, but then this happens. And instead of just like, these things happen, which you can totally do, but I like to do a little bit of like, if this, then this, but this, because of this, so this, you know what I mean? Just try to have a little bit more like cause and effect continuity written down.
Cool.
So like that helps a lot. But then obviously like
Your stories are so punchy.
I mean,
cause effect.
Yeah,
cause
but
effect.
Also like,
meaning, which
in
is great.
The draft part, it's just like, okay, yeah, I said that was gonna happen, but now I've got a big gulf to cross between this happening and that, and then like a million things happen between those two bullet points, and I'm like, okay, how are we gonna get back over here again?
I'll be really interested to hear what you say for your third book, because I remember you saying last week, I think, that you wanted to overwrite the second because you think it'll be easier to remove than add, which I think is probably wise. But it'll be interesting to see, now that you've kind of done both, what your opinion on that is when you write your third one.
Yeah, and it's funny because like my advice all the time is just like, just hammer it out, don't worry about how it looks, like just make it, just write it down,
white knuckle.
But like also, so like, it's funny because like I catch myself every now and then when I'm drafting, I'm like, that could be just a little bit cleaner, Evan. Come on, you don't need to write like or whatever in there. You know what I mean? Like, say so what actually happens. You know, but yeah, definitely, I have some parts. Mostly when I say that, it's just like, don't worry about like repeated words. Don't worry about how you're starting sentences and stuff like that. But like, you know, write down what's going on.
That's my biggest problem. Is like, I like to glorify and how awesome I think something is, but I never end up thinking that when I actually am rereading it, and then I end up trying to fix it, and I spend hours the entire time you should be spent writing, creating some new thing, editing like one paragraph, and then I don't even want anything to do with it all when I'm done with that hour of hell. And then that's some wisdom, dude. Just go forward, fix it later.
Yeah, like, what do you think, you're like writing an entire finished book like sentence by sentence? You craft master, you? Like, no, dude, of course
literally
you're not.
Yes, like,
no, you're not.
I thought
you're,
that
you're not, you're
before I did it at all.
You're writing a glorified outline, you know what I mean? Like, it's,
I can even remember thinking my hubris is ridiculous. Yeah. Like, I'm just gonna smash out a perfect like line. And then I started writing and I was like, that's so utterly ridiculous.
You know what's better than doing that, or at least the attempt to be perfect, is not really worrying about it and surprising yourself. That's a nice feel. Ooh, you know what I mean? Because if you lower your expectations, you're never disappointed. So, little
straight up.
Okay, so reading though. So I read this book called Downpour by an author named Christopher Hawkins. It came out in September of last year. I was just kind of cruising on my Kindle, looking at Kindle Unlimited stuff. And because I kind of start and stop horror novels all the time on Kindle Unlimited, just because some stuff just isn't my bag. It's like not really what I'm in the mood for, but I'll give it like a good 20 pages or something. This book called Downpour, all one word, it caught my eye because the blurb on the front of it, or at least on the Kindle page, said it was like, it should be on the shelf next to The Mist by Stephen King.
Ooh, I remember.
And
you,
I was
speaking
like,
highly
that is
that.
Some praise, right? Yeah, and I love that story. I love the movie. I love the novella. And so Downpour, it's kind of like a mix of The Mist by Stephen King and that movie Nope, the Jordan Peele movie. So it's kind of like both, and also kind of like Signs, like the M. Night Shyamalan movie. So it's kind of like all three of those like mixed together.
Wow.
It was great. It was really, really good. I mean, I think that there were definitely some parts of it that were, so it's like, I don't want to give too much away, but there's like a domestic issue happening in the house. It's nothing like super messed up or anything, but it's just like, there's some domestic issues happening. It's like a family living in this house on a farm. Guy like inherited a farm from his dad who passed away, and he just has no idea what to do with this farm, and like they're losing money, and it's just like this tense situation. And then this weird looking cloud like appears over the house and starts getting bigger, and then when it starts to rain, all this weird stuff starts happening. And the dad is just like running around like Billy Zane on the Titanic, just like trying to figure out like what the hell is happening. So it's a very good book. And the writing is awesome. What I really like about it is that, so it's got like this definite like H.P. Lovecraft kind of like, what the hell is going on right now kind of thing to it, which I think that the author does really well. But also it's like, he just has these cool little lines every now and then, like towards the end of chapters, or sometimes it's all through one the dad's perspective. He just, the way the dad like just thinks about stuff, about, he's just like, oh, and it's like out there looking at me. It's just like, ugh. My god, like, what a situation this is. So yeah, I mean, I would
dude,
recommend
that is a
it.
Scary thought, yeah, though. It's like looking at a dark window, you can't really see outside.
There's a lot of moments like that, man. Yeah, it's a cool little surprise. Like, I wasn't expecting much out of it. It was like late at night, and I crushed it. It's like 245 pages. I read it in a couple days, and it's just a really solid, like, weird things happening. I really like stories that just happen in like one spot too, and this just happens in one house. And it incorporates technology in an interesting way. Yeah, it's just a really good little surprise horror novel, and not a lot of reviews or ratings or anything. So everybody go check that out.
I've been going down a little rabbit hole while you've been talking here and listening intently also. But one ear, the other half of my brain was looking it up. And the quote from The Mist that you were talking about is by Daniel Krauss, the author of a book called Whale Fall.
Oh, I want to read that.
But
too.
He says, yeah, this book hits like a summer squall and never lets up. A real-time, one-location doom machine that earns its place beside Stephen King's The Mist. That's Daniel Krauss.
And if you haven't seen The Mist, the movie, I would highly recommend that movie if you've got the stomach for weird creatures and a very disappointing ending. The novella is also really, really good. I would check out the novella in audiobook, because the audio, that's how I did it, and it was just like such a cool experience. But yeah, The Mist is really, really good. It's about like a failed government experiment that like envelops this town in this apocalyptic mist, and all these creatures from this other dimension start. Oh, it's so cool. And they're like trapped in a grocery store. Ah, it's so amazing.
You mentioned that you want to read Whale Fall.
I do.
And really have you seen the cover? Yes,
that's why I want to read it.
It's awesome, dude. Okay. It's The Martian meets 127 yeah. Hours in this astoundingly great Times bestselling author, scientifically accurate thriller about a scuba diver who's been swallowed by an 80-foot, 60-ton sperm whale and only has 1 hour to escape before his oxygen runs out.
Yeah, I
want to
read that.
Wow, what a Jonah sort
of. Yeah, Jonah. I said Noah. The cover is so good that when I was in the bookstore with my brother, I did a video a little while back where I bought him some fantasy book like starter kit books. When we were in the store, we walked past Whalefall and it was like, holy shit, like what is this? And I it just really goes to show that, because like he wasn't really doing that with any other books except for Whalefall, because the cover of it is just, it's such a money book cover. Like it just tells you everything you need to know about this book in one image. So cool.
It really is enticing. Did you hear about that? Actually happened. There was a scuba diver that was swallowed accidentally, of course. You know, these, they don't eat people, but I forget what type of whale, I'm sure a big one, probably sperm whale or something, swallowed this guy, and he spent, I don't know how long he spent, I can't find it quickly, but he spent longer than you would want to be inside of a whale. This is how you die was his first thought.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, that's definitely crazy. Something I want to get to. I got to some other stuff. I'm almost finished with Mistborn. It's taken me a little bit to get through that one.
It was a humpback whale, by the way. I'm sorry.
Mistborn is just as good the second time through. It's really, really, like, I just, every time I turn the page, man, Sanderson is just so easy. It's just like, it's just effortless, you know.
He's the Ben and Jerry's.
I know, man. It's really cool. I'm definitely going to keep going with Mistborn. I want to read that third book at least because I've heard so many good things about it. But
you said you're on the second one.
I'm not done with the first one yet. I have like 100 something pages left or something. They're gearing up. But yeah, there's scenes in Mistborn that I like totally forgot about. And I was just like, oh my god, that seems so cool. And just not even like action scenes, but just really good conversations and just like the way that Vin is kind of like learning all this stuff. And the way that it's explained to the reader, it's just a gem of a book. But the second one is a slog. I stopped reading it, but I'm going to power through that, get through the third one. But yeah, Mistborn might take me, all three of those books might take me a little bit to read.
You should audiobook the second one.
Okay, I'm going to have to do this publicly. I'm going to have to say this to everybody and disappoint. Dude, I don't really love Michael Kramer. I think I've said it on the podcast before. I don't think he's bad.
I
don't think I could do better. I don't think any of that. It's just like after listening to like 7 Wheel of Time books and like re-listening to the Stormlight Archive, it's just like I just don't want to do it anymore. Like I've spent,
dude, you're allowed to have opinions about
with Michael Kramer and like it's just putting it back on, it's just like, yeah. And then Ben walked into the building and saw this other man.
Think he would sound if you look at him.
He's a really good audiobook narrator, especially when his voice gets all serious and dark and slow. Obviously he's very, very good at it, but
he looks like a villain.
I just like reading it. That's just my personal taste. Then also with Oliver Twist, I'm making my way through it. It's really good. Oliver Twist is a banger book. Super awesome with like how do I put this? So like
kind of boring in a good way.
Okay, so I don't really mind that very much. It there are some pockets of it where it's just like, oh my god, can we get a move on, please? Like this is
right. We get this.
But okay, also like okay, I know that books that were written a long time ago don't really reflect the values we have today sometimes. Okay, I'm not,
or even the way we tell stories,
I'm not trying to say it should, I'm not trying to say we should burn all the Charles Dickens books or anything, but there's just like some lines in there where I'm just like, geez, like this is like
it's like watching Blazing Saddles or something. You're like, oh, we don't do that anymore.
Dude, I know seriously. And it's just like I'm definitely not like, oh, we should take all these books and never let anyone read or anything like that. That's not what I'm doing.
You're not canceling Dickens.
No, I wouldn't try to, but it's just like, it's sometimes when I'm reading Dickens, it's just like slaps me in the face a little bit. I'm just like, wow, you just said that about all the Irish people? Like, oh my God. Like, you know what England did, right? Like, oh my God, this is so gnarly. But like, also, I'm reading the Penguin Classics. I like the Penguin Classics a lot because there's like tons of like forwards and notes and acknowledgements and stuff. And just there's all kinds of different stuff that's like notes on the text and things like that. And there's all kinds of like footnotes. It's funny. I was like that specific line about Irish people, which was like really messed up. It was like the footnote for it was like, I'm like reading this line. I was like, oh my God. And then there's like this little number at the end of it. And I was like, oh, okay, of course. Like, because the book is just like, hold on, hold on, hold on. And then I like go back to the back, and it's just like, okay, so Charles Dickens had kind of an issue with Irish people.
It's like, oh, that's funny. I'm glad that they didn't. It would be a little condescending if they were like, not all Irish people are, you know, it's like, but they're explaining why Charles Dickens had that opinion. It was written in like
the early 1800s, you know. They just have I disagree with it, but it's like different politics and like what was not even different points of view. I won't even go that far, but just like, I feel like for his specific time period, in a specific location, there were different like standards to which you could speak about other people, you know what I mean? So he was working within those standards of that day. And today it's just like, it's just weird because I don't really read that kind of that's kind of stuff very often.
It's abrasive.
It's just like said with like so much earnestness, like, of course these people are just like this, every single one of them. It's just like, oh my god, dude. But yeah, I mean, it is a really cool book, and I'm excited to move on to A Tale of Two Cities. I've heard that one's like that and David Copperfield's, because I also want to read Demon Copperhead by, I think, Barbara Kingsolver. Is that the author's name?
And they have kind of both copper in them. And
Demon Copperhead, it was a, oh wow, I got the Kingsolver, I got that author right without even looking it up.
No one is
Demon Brian. Copperhead won the Pulitzer in 2023, I think.
Wow.
And it's like Southern Appalachia, sorry anybody that's from that region, I don't know how to pronounce that. It's the story of a boy born to a teenage single mother in a single wide trailer with no assets beyond his dead father's good looks and copper colored hair, a caustic wit, and a fierce talent for survival. Relayed in his own unsparing voice, Demon braves the modern perils of foster care, child labor, derelict schools, athletic success, addiction, disastrous loves, and crushing losses. So I think that it's like, it's a play on David Copperfield as like Demon Copperhead. But like a day kind of thing. But I've heard it's an amazing book, and I would really like to check it out after reading David Copperfield.
Totally. What a honor it would be, as you're becoming an author, and I'm sure you'll be critically acclaimed one of these days. What an honor it would be to be asked to write a foreword.
Oh my gosh. Even
a
blurb.
That'd be so cool.
Like, hey,
yeah,
do
just
you think
a blurb on the front?
Yeah, oh my gosh.
You know you've made it when you're on the front of someone else's book.
Okay, and last thing before I hand it over to you, I watched the first couple episodes of the Fallout show.
Oh, tell me everything.
Dude, it's great. It's really good. Like, and I have, okay, so I had low expectations, and then everybody was like, this is amazing, and then I was like, okay, well, now my expectations are high, and I love the Fallout games.
So
like,
you didn't have low expectations?
I really like the Fallout games, and my expectations were high, and it's definitely surpassed. Like, dude, they went so hard. They love Fallout. Like, whoever made this this show, like, everything looks exactly the way it's supposed to. The acting is great. The story so far is really good. The humor in it, like, there's just so many like funny moments that are just, it's such its own show. Like, it's such its own thing. It's not just like this stock post-apocalyptic show with a Fallout coat of paint on it, which is what I was worried it was going to be. Like, I was really worried that it was just going to be this thing that was just like limping along with just the Fallout stuff happening and like nods to the video games and stuff. No, that's not what it is. Let me just say one of the things that I really love about it, this isn't a spoiler or anything. Stim packs in the Fallout games, if you're not aware, stim packs are how you get your health back up, right? And sure, they work really quickly. And in the Fallout show, if you use a stim pack, you're just better. And it's just like they brought that video game logic over, and I love that. I think that's so cool. They were just like, who cares if it makes sense, like, whatever, this is how it is in the video game, so we're gonna do it here. And it's like, what is this, like the least believable thing about all of this? You know what I mean? I just love it so much. It's so cool. It's a good show.
They picked a lot of actors that look like serial killers, kind of. Like Walter Goggins, that guy's got a serial killer smile, dude. I don't even know how to say it, sorry. Mose Arias, serial killer look. And then probably leading the charge is Johnny Pemberton, man.
Chad, the expert on serial killer faces, first impressions,
right? Me, yes. Yeah.
I would really recommend it, man. I think you'll really like it. It's a really good show.
Cool. What sort of humor, compare the humor to something, is it like Marvel humor?
No
Cool. I'm sick of Marvel humor.
It's really bloody. Like, it's like, that's more fine. Bloody than I thought it was gonna be. So I haven't seen The Boys, but I feel like it's the same as The Boys.
Hell yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I've like seen clips of The Boys, and it's like, so please correct me in the Discord if I'm totally way off here, but I'm getting that vibe, you know, of just like, it's, that's just awesome. It doesn't seem to care who is upset about watching that show. You know what I mean? Dude,
you know that with the boys. I love the boys, man. I like the first two seasons really good. The third one, it kind of, I don't know. They're just, it's, you know, you kind of know when they flipped over the line of like, you're obviously milking this for money now. The main story that we're all here for, it's kind of been solved already, you know?
But yeah, that was it. I'm also playing Elden Ring again. I've been streaming that. If you didn't know, everybody that's listening, go follow me on Twitch if you want to. I was streaming on TikTok for a little bit, but I got booted off of TikTok's live thing because they like suspended me for a couple of weeks. Because like I was doing a stream, I was just in a silly, goofy mood, and there hadn't been anybody in that had said anything in the chat for a little while because I was just like playing video games. There were like 15 people in there or something, and we were all just watching me play video games. And then TikTok like sent me this like push notification through the chat that was like, it wasn't even through the chat. It was like on the interface that I used to stream myself on my computer. And it was like, we're closing this stream due to inactivity, like, which was basically TikTok's way of being like, hey, you need to like pump up those numbers. You need to get people more engaged. Yeah, I know, exactly. So then I was like,
dude, everybody's got to start somewhere.
But then I took the bait and I was just like, all right, so we're talking about body count now. We're talking about like alpha male stuff. Also, the god that you believe in is stupid and you're stupid for believing him. And it was just like, because that's all I ever see.
Israel and Gaza sucks.
That's like all that I see when I'm TikTok live, you know, or not even on TikTok live, but just like scrolling through TikTok. And then it'll be like cat video, funny skit, book video. Your god is stupid and you're not going to hell. You're going to a worse place. You know what I mean? It's just like, whoa, oh my gosh. Like, this is so...
It finds what pisses you off.
I know, but it's just like, it's so all that being said, I was having a laugh and I was like, how about we just talk about all this stuff? And then TikTok was like, you're bullying and harassing, you need to stop. Wow. And yeah, so then it booted me because I was like, body count, god, like
red pill, blue pill, all the pills.
Really, like, really stupid. I shouldn't have done that. I feel silly, like right when I got it.
No,
like,
they shouldn't be trying to police your conversation.
Like playing video games, man. Like, geez.
Free speech definitionally has to cover the speech that we don't like, right?
I guess. Like, I don't know. But
we can't stop people from having conversations. That's how
but
we make
that's
sure.
Not
that
like, that's not even what I was doing. Like, that's not even what I was.
I know you were. Trolling.
I was trolling myself apparently. But yeah. If you want to follow me on Twitch, I don't really talk about body count or your respective religions.
That seems like they respect freedom over on Twitch a little bit more. Go Twitch.
Like, yeah, I don't.
Yeah, maybe. I don't. I actually don't know.
I do
that.
Feel like Twitch definitely doesn't really have somebody watching me or the algorithm watching me as much. But Twitch is cool. If you want to follow me on there, we'll put the link in the description on here. And I play like every couple days. I'm playing Elden Ring right now. I'm playing as a confessor, which is like it's a faith build, which is it's like kind of magic, but kind of not. He's kind of weak. I'm having kind of a rough time with him because usually I play like really big, beefy, like strong characters that I can just kind of tank over everything with. And I got to be a little...
You're a tanker.
Yeah, and I got to be a little...
I'm a rogue.
Man, I'm just like not patient enough. I just want to like smash my way through the whole game and like just level myself up barely enough so that I can just like mess my way through like and just roll around until the boss is dead, you know, because I just like to cheese everything like that. But with this playthrough, I have to be a little bit more crafty. And the DLC... The only DLC for any Elden Ring fans, FromSoft came out a couple days ago and said the Shadow of the Erdtree, the new DLC that's coming out in about a month, it will be the last DLC and the first DLC. They're only doing one, which is, I feel like it's fine because so the optimist in me and the person, the big FromSoft fan, they have my full confidence. I feel like there's a couple reasons they're doing this. So they're doing it, one, because it's going to be a really big DLC and everybody will be satisfied with it. And also because I think that they're working on something. I think they're working on not like Elden Ring 2, but I think they're either going to do Dark Souls 4. And if you think I'm wrong, I understand because they said they were done with Dark Souls, but that's what everybody says until a big truck of money comes up to their house.
A big truck of money comes up to their house.
Or they're working on Bloodborne 2. If they put out Bloodborne 2, nobody will hear from me for like 3 weeks.
But you love.
Oh my
right?
God, Bloodborne's amazing. Bloodborne. It's such a good game. And so if they did another one, I'd be so happy. But yeah, in my opinion, them not doing multiple DLCs for Elden Ring, kind of, it's like their way of communicating like, hey, this is a big thing we're doing for you for this game. It's $40. It's going to be huge. then we're done. We're not doing Elden Ring anymore. And it's just like, ooh, well, wow. Then what are you doing? One of the biggest game companies in the world.
If it makes you feel any better, just to go back to the live thing real fast, I was just doing some research. Again, listening heavily and doing research. Yep. You are not alone. No, there's a lot of people on Reddit who are also very upset. Yeah. Apparently, if you don't click on it every hour, it'll like, I think someone was explaining that it's their attempt to stop looping, like something that, you know, it's not live video, which is
totally legit.
I don't know.
But also,
it seems like they're catching fish that they don't want to eat in their net, you know?
I don't know. Loop it. Whatever. You're still entertaining people. Like, I don't know.
And like, people will follow the votes. If people notice a loop, they'll get out of there.
Or they'll stay because they like one before. You know,
totally. Yeah, I don't know. And if they fine, it's fine. Dude, again, internet, TikTok freedom, not promoting it.
Let me just go on a little bit of a social media influencer tangent here.
Please.
I have been trying to figure out the golden rule to try to like grow my audience even far past what it already is, which is very large for a normal, regular creator like me. If you're trying to be a content creator and you're trying to make. Don't try to game the system, okay?
The
system is smarter than you, okay? Like, just
stop listening
just
to YouTube.
Don't
gurus.
Do any. None of it's gonna work, okay?
The time of day, the hashtags.
The reason I'm saying that, take it from me, it's not worth the mental anguish that you're putting yourself through. Just make content that you like making and put it up and see what happens. Like, I'm so
make
sorry.
Quality.
I wish that there was like this cool, like, oh, well, if you post it 8:03 in the morning every Tuesday when the moon looks exactly, it's like, that's not how it works. It's just you.
Nor do we want it to work.
I guess,
like
I mean, you just toss it in the river. And if it catches, it catches, you know, and like, that's, I'm so sorry. Like, I wish it was cooler and like shinier than that, but like, just make the stuff that you really like to make. Make it fun, you know? Like,
dude,
I like making
good
videos. It's fun. Like, and like, I just made a spoofy, like, Cat Williams video, like, where it's so silly, but it's just like a CapCut thing that I noticed. And I was like, oh, this is funny. And like, I haven't even checked to see if anybody like liked it, or it's just, I liked it, you know? So it doesn't even matter. Like,
you said something to me that I really resonated with, and I've followed a lot. Not that I make a lot of short form content, but I intend to this year. Now that I intend to, and
what happened?
You said something where you're like, people think. What did you say?
I said, what happened? Sorry. No.
Oh yeah,
awful.
I know. Yeah. Well, you know. Well, not good at committing and following through. Anyway, you said. So many times when you post content, you think that was a great piece of content, like it deserved more. And I thought that all the time back when I was doing it more. And now looking back, I'm like, didn't deserve more. But you said, no, it didn't. Like, it deserved exactly how much it got, because people will like, if it's good, people will like it. And it doesn't really matter what your opinion is on it.
If it's sticky, it'll stick. Yeah. And like, obviously.
And like, you know, humble yourself. I think that's really the kind of the point there.
I mean, you're working hard on your content and stuff, and everybody's working hard on it. It's just, you have to remember there's just like millions of people that are doing the exact same thing. The algorithm can only handle so much. And trust me, like, I mean, if you, like, I've had dry spells where I'm just like, oh my God, like none of my stuff is hitting right now. Like, what the hell? Then I just kind of like throw something up and it does really well. And everybody's like, hey, this was cool. And I was like, really? That was cool? Like, not the thing I spent 4.5 hours making that like nobody, but it's funny too, because like 6 months ago or something, I made a 7-minute long video about The Secret History by Donna Tartt. And I was like, this is going to blow up. Ooh. Like, this is going to be like the coolest.
7 minutes.
Dude. And like, it was a good, decent video for me. I mean, like, did fine. But also, it didn't go viral because it's like, man, not a lot of market for a 7-minute video about The Secret History on TikTok. Let me tell you, like, I mean, there is, like, people were engaged, and it was I made it as well as I could. There's like a little mini YouTube video because I really wanted to talk about that book. But the reason that I wasn't like super bummed out about it is because I really liked making that video and talking about that book, and not only that, but like seeing how other people were thinking about what I was saying and about that book too. And I had like that conversation going. That was what I wanted to talk to more people about it. So it's fine. Like, I got what I wanted out of that, you know. But yeah, I mean, let's move over to you. I could talk about social media forever.
It's funny, before we stop talking about that real fast, I was thinking while you're talking, is like, so many people who are like, this video deserves more, which maybe to your last video is to the point that you're making, is like, most people, I feel like, make content that they want, but like, they don't make it for everyone else. And like, you know, lots of times you got to kind of read the room a little, you know. And there's probably a lot of Donna Tartt, like,
there is, though. People love Donna Tartt.
But like, it's so niche.
But like, the reason, I mean, like, the reason I say like, make stuff for you is because you'll be happier ultimately with the process of creating stuff. You know, I mean, like, yeah, chase trends every now and then, you know, I've totally done that before. Like when Fourth Wing came out and everybody was talking about it, I was like, all right, I got
to
read this.
Funny, I was trying to make the opposite point, but I think my point was like, don't just entertain yourself, entertain everyone else.
Nah, man,
know?
Entertain yourself.
No, I disagree, so?
Man. Like read the room and...
Okay, well, I mean, you know, dude, I have nothing compared to your followers.
Like I was saying, like read the room, check out trends every now and then. Obviously, you don't want to just be like this island unto yourself that has no resonance with
only
any...
R.A.
Salvador. Not saying that, but like the process of creating content is kind of grueling sometimes. Like it just is, even if it looks like it's not. If it looks like a video was thrown together, like maybe it was, but also... that some time went into it. You know, time always goes into it. Thought always goes into it. And so, you know, especially if you're starting out, like people do recommend, like post a lot, you know, post like 2 or 3 times a day. And like, that is a thing you should do, you know, just volume, like get totally. A lot of different stuff out. Cause like anything could catch. But
I like your quality.
I mean,
message, you know, like make something good,
make something that is fun for you or interesting. Fun isn't necessarily the right word. It's one of them, but what's interesting for you? What do you want to talk about?
Totally. And that I get of not like entertaining yourself, because like if you're interested in it, you're naturally will talk about it with passion. Sure. Yeah. And you'll make more quality content, you know?
Yeah, that's why I don't review books that I didn't finish. Like not because I'm like, not because I don't want to like make anyone upset because I didn't like it, but it's just like, it's not that interesting. Like it's not very interesting to be like, oh, I didn't really get through it because it just was like kind of meh. And then people are like, what?
Right.
But if I love something,
the internet is full of people complaining about
stuff.
I mean,
like if I have a really good reason to complain about something, I might make a video. Like if I'm just like, why is this like this?
Well, in the conversation with this, we have a mantra that Evan and I have said hundreds, if not thousands of times to each other in the background whenever we're like, oh, but this broke, we got to do it again. We're like, should we just patch it together? And it's, we don't make mid shit.
Nope.
We don't make mid.
We've put out mid shit.
We have, yeah.
But we don't set out to make mid shit.
No, we intentionally try to avoid it. Yeah.
That'd be a good t-shirt. We don't make mid shit. But then on the back of it, it says, we have made mid shit. BRK, we have made mid shit. Sorry. Let's hear about your week. I've rambled on quite a bit.
No, I'm not rambling. I was talking about what I asked you about. And, you know, your week is great.
Very loquaciously, I think.
Very well said. Good word choice as well. I have a document that I really need to start making content with. It's just called Words That We Should Use Correctly. And it's just cool words that I've found that I've put into this document. And it's like 17 pages of words. I should just do a word of the day. I have enough words for at least 2 months.
I love it.
Okay, so I finished the Combat Codes, the second one.
Cool.
Really excited to have Alexander Darwin on. Don't have a date quite yet, but my life is a little more stable now, so
yay.
I'm going to be reaching out to him and setting it up. Yeah, things are looking good, though. So the future is bright, definitely. Picked up Alan Carr's Guide to Stop Smoking again, because I really didn't commit to that the first time.
There you go. Baby steps.
Baby steps. Yep, baby steps. Man, what about Bob? It's such a great movie, by the way. Sidebar.
I never heard that.
You never seen it? That's where baby steps come from. Baby steps to the... Oh, wow. Maybe that's not where... Anyway, I wrote a bunch this week, which is nice. I feel like sometimes when you're a little depressed and like kind of sad, like you write better. Is that a thing?
I mean, it's certainly a very cool way to disconnect. Like,
in a healthy, creative way,
I would say. Yeah.
Healthy, that's the word I'm looking for. Escapism. Mm-hmm. There we go.
Absolutely.
Like the same reason that I read.
Yeah.
But it also kind of fuels the best... creation as well, you know.
Yeah, writing it takes up a lot of your attention, you know. You can't do two things at the same time,
but it's fun to make things, to invent something new. Man, I had some great ideas too this week. I'm really excited about them. Yeah, dude, it was fun, really, really fun. Though it's fun, you'll have a great idea about something like, oh, that's a cool idea, but then to manifest it into a story is like so much work, you know. It's like homes are awesome, but like building one, man, kind of sucks sometimes.
Yeah,
you know. It's a lot of smashed thumbs. Unless you're my father, who can sink a 16 penny with one hit to set, one hit to sink. Dude, it's amazing.
A 16
penny nail.
I don't know what that is.
We don't measure things by the penny, but that's just, I'm sure, something that's kind of lasted from the olden days, because I think it was like the same weight as a 16 penny, or maybe that was what they purchased it for, but it's a pretty big nail. It's like there's like 8 penny and the 16 penny, and the 16 pennies are pretty big nail.
Wow, what a veer off course that was.
Anyway, getting a little bit off topic here. I picked up Empire of Storms again.
Oh, cool. Yeah, man, I haven't been reading that. How are you feeling about getting back into Malazan and Throne of Glass? Do you want to do that this week, or how are you feeling about the workload there?
I want to be super sniper with these books, and I think that that will help us, and I think it will give our audience a better experience with it. Consistency on one as opposed to kind of wishy-washy on both. So I think if you're amenable, I would love to pause Malazan and smash
Throne of Glass. We can do that for sure. Yeah, I just wanted to check in with you and see like how you felt about like doing 3 episodes a week again. I think we could move back up to it for consistency sake.
Yeah, I think so too.
Cool. Yeah, I'm gonna do that.
Yeah, I want to do 2 episodes a week, just the Monday morning minute, and then smash through Empire of Glass, get that done, and I think that will make me enjoy it more. What did I say?
Empire of Glass. We're reading Empire of Storms. It's an easy mistake.
Oh, Empire of Storms. I'm not even gonna cut that out. No, man. That was a fun.
Don't cut any of that out. I'm happy for the audience to know what we've got planned and stuff.
Authenticity. No, I'm gonna keep it there. I want people to know. And if you're super unhappy with that and you're like, I need Malazan, let me know in the Discord because we can change the plan. I just really think that we'll be some focusing, like by doing less, we'll be able to do more, I think is the point there.
That's kind of what we've been at for the year, and then stuff comes up.
Yep, exactly. So, let's sniper Empire of Storms and get that Throne of Glass done, because cool. I think it'll enjoy. Because I think also it'll allow me to focus a little bit more.
Yeah, I think that cruising through it like you were. I think because I was like reading it all through, and like there were definitely parts where you were like, "Oh, I don't even remember that." And it's like, Chad, come on, like,
what? Dude, not. Yeah. Sometimes I do things just for the sake of doing them, and that's not how I want to.
We're going to finish strong with Throne of Glass, I think. I'm excited to see what happens in Kingdom of Ash, see how this all wraps up.
Me too. And the story's like, we're kind of prepared. We're set up there. I know enough about the world and the characters that I think it's going to be cool. And Moss has never let me down with the craziness that she allows to happen in her books. Like, whoa, really shaking a snow globe, which is my favorite. So the thing that I really am excited to talk to you about, well, 2 things, is I finished The Will of the Many. Wow. I almost called you, but it was like 2 in the morning, and I was like, and I remember you on the podcast last week being like, you're going to call me, and I was like, I'm itching. So this is the first time I told Evan I didn't have that call, because I thought maybe, he's probably sleeping, and it would be cool to have the conversation here on the podcast. I loved that book. You said there were some boring moments. I like was looking for them, and I really couldn't find him. Like, there's
really, wow, interesting.
There's like 80 pages where like not very much is happening.
I think I know exactly what part.
That's not even true. It's kind of it's always happening. It's the story's always going. Man,
I wish we could have a spoiler conversation about it. We might be able to have one later, but there's definitely a whole section, not section, but there's like a whole like they like go somewhere, and I'm like, why are they going here? Like this.
I know what you're talking about.
And then they're there for like a while.
And it's a forced. It's forced in there.
Yeah.
Because it's an important plot point. Something happens there that's important. It is.
Yeah. Okay. Doesn't matter. It's fine. We can move on. But dude, the ending.
Okay. I don't know if I like it. I'm really going to have to read the next book to know whether or not I like it.
No, I agree with you. I don't know if I like it either. I was like
annoyed.
Changed
the dynamic of
everything. I was like annoyed. I was like, oh, cool. So we're just not reading anything that I thought we were reading. That's cool. Like whatever.
Right.
It's appreciate like you, James.
Almost a sci-fi now?
I don't know, man. We're going to have to find out. That's why I'm going to go buy that book the second it comes out, because I need to know.
The second. I think I'll reread it first just to really get myself stoked, because it's that
very good. Yeah. Highly recommended.
Highly recommended. The guy write like 40 different short stories between now and Lycanius? Because like Lycanius, again, is not bad. I know I hated on it a lot, but like...
This is a whole different league. Like this feels like a
completely... And this is a whole different league.
It's really good.
It's we've gone from college football to the NFL. It's like
that's a good way of putting
totally
it.
Different. Yeah, man, I was just so impressed. I hope he's listening too, because James Islington was going to come on the podcast, and then he had something come up that he was just like, I can't. I'm too overwhelmed. He sent me a couple copies of. He probably was. He said, which, if he blew us off to write that book, good decision, Islington. You crush. We know you're listening. Blow us off. But don't blow me off now, because I want you on the podcast to talk about The Will of the Many, because
I wonder if he's more down. I think that I follow him on Instagram. I think he was drafting the second book, which is like 260,000 words or something like that, which is like so long.
We've emailed a bunch. I'll
hit him up. It'd be cool to have him on.
He knows who I am.
Yeah.
And then the other thing that I want to talk to you about that I'm excited is I started Bookshops and Bone Dust because I needed a lighthearted. Dude, it's so funny. I picked up Christopher Buhlman's Between Two Fires. I was like, I'm gonna read this. And then like a few pages into it, I was like, nah. And then I remember you saying like, man, that book's pretty heavy. And I was like, I don't really need heavy in my life right now. I need some frothy latte-ness. Man, Bookshops and Bone Dust. he did it again. Really good. As the scholar and poet DJ Khaled would say, another one.
Oh my God. Oh, wow. Chad, wait, I need to interrupt this whole podcast real quick.
Please do.
Have you been keeping up with the Kendrick Lamar Drake stuff that's been going on?
I have
okay,
not.
So we're
going
to talk about it next
barely
week.
On the fringe.
We'll talk about it next week if we want to.
I want to hear a little bit about it. Just tell me, give me like a 30-second what's happening, bullet point.
So this is going to be a little bit more of a PG-13 spot of the podcast, everybody. But okay. So as far as I'm aware, there's been some I think yeah, I don't know yeah, I, okay, so. I don't know who put out the diss track first, but I think that like I think that like J. Cole said something like, oh, me and Drake and Kendrick are all like, we're like the three, you know, like we're all even, like, you know what I mean? And then Kendrick put out a song where apparently like one of the lines was like, there's no three, there's only me, right? Oh, and then I guess like, I don't, and please, if you're listening right now and I'm like so wrong about this, please correct me. I'm just keeping up through like TikTok and Instagram and stuff. But like, and then Drake put out some kind of diss track that was, you know,
that sounded exactly like whatever song is popular right now.
I'm not going to take sides here, but I will take Kendrick's side.
I will. Drake's
side. So Drake put out like this diss track and it was just like talking about Kendrick, and then Kendrick put out a diss track in response. It has all been happening like really quickly. And then like Drake finally put out one that was like, you've got issues with your wife.
Whoa.
Then Kendrick put out a track recently, very recently, that is basically just like, you sleep with children. And then put Drake's house, took a picture of Drake's house, like an aerial picture of Drake's house, and then put a bunch of those like icons that you find on like a pedophile website, like on his house. And that's the cover of the single. And
it's just like, that's dude, rough. That's also a little doxy.
Oh man. Like it's so, okay. So we're going to move on. We'll talk about it later. We'll talk about it later, but like, I just, this is so not related to books. Although Kendrick did win a Pulitzer because he's that good. Wow. So yeah, man, he's amazing.
I didn't really like Kendrick until I saw him live, and man, he puts out a money live show.
I've liked like pretty much literally everything that man has done. He's a genius.
So, yeah, I re-listened to it now that I had a better frame for it and a little more respect for him as an artist. And man, I really like Kendrick. Though of the three, it's not even close for me. I love
J. Cole.
The man, very good. Man, like single-handedly brought hip hop back. Back.
J. Cole's really good. Really good. Yeah, I don't know where Drake really fits in there. I don't really understand. Like,
Drake makes good music. The problem with Drake that I have is he just finds whatever's popular and then he makes a song that's in that same sort of like style. And so I just think he's unoriginal. Like, his songs are actually good, but it's only because he's like copying.
I think Kendrick, like,
and that's why he's remained relevant for 30 years.
Well,
you know?
Kendrick had like, I think accused him of using ghostwriters. And then Drake was like, no, those are what's the word? I'm like, collaborating
assistance,
collaborating with
you, collaborating.
It's just like, okay.
Dude, I don't know, like, it's not that I have hundreds of rap songs written, probably nowhere nearly as good as any of those three can do, but like, it's not that hard to write. Like, your job is writing rap songs. You should be able to write one and not use a collaborator, you know? Like, that's like your job. It seems a little like,
did you hear, I don't know if this is true, but apparently when Eminem met Kendrick for the first time, he like took him into a room and was like, all right, freestyle right now. And Kendrick did, because Eminem didn't believe that Kendrick was that good. Like,
I love
that,
dude.
He was just
that's
like, there's no way this guy is like this good. And he is. Like, he's
totally.
Just...
It's so funny you should bring that up, because I was just going to say, like, rapping is all like, a lot of rappers can freestyle. And it's like, if you can't write a song, like, you're definitely not able to freestyle, you know, because some people can do that pretty good just off the top of their head. I can freestyle pretty good. I'm probably better at freestyling than I am writing. So like, dude, if you want to see a masterful freestyle, listen to J. Cole coming back on, I think it's Flex.
I've watched that. Yeah.
It's so good. The man's the king. And any rapper that doesn't kind of think that they're the best inside, you know, there's a hubris that comes with the game, I feel like, you know, that's inherent to hip hop that I kind of respect.
I think it's starting to feel like, I mean, it's between these two people, obviously, who are in like an echelon of fame that I will never understand. But like, it seems like some pretty below the belt stuff happening.
Oh, for sure. Like, it was like Biggie and Tupac when Tupac was like, you're fat, you know, it's like, do you know the song I'm talking about? After your B, you fat mofo is what he says. And then it goes on like It's terrible. But it's like way too much. It's like, dude, come on.
Yeah, it's a lot. But anyway, let's talk about how bad of rapping
the other person is.
let's move back to what you were doing. You were talking about...
But I do think a diss track makes them the best rapper that they can be. I love beef, love beef. Just no one gets shot.
No, it's like all over my feed right now. It's like all I see. Anyway, go back to Bookshops and Bone Dust. Tell me what you like about it.
I didn't know that it was a prequel.
Oh, really?
Huh. I had no idea. I was like, hey, Viv. So to those who want a little synopsis without any spoilers, it is a high fantasy prequel to Legends and Lattes that follows Viv, an orc mercenary who was injured during a hunt and sent to the seaside town of Merc to heal. And then while recovering, she gets some friends and there's a bad guy. And
there's a whole thing. There's a bookshop.
A whole thing. Yeah, there's a bookshop. And it really captures that like sun going through a window with dust floating so in the good. Air and like cracking open a good tome. And you're like smelling it because it just smells so good because they used to use addictive glue.
Ooh, I have something for you to listen to while you're reading that, actually.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I got it. And this is a suggestion for anybody else, too, because I really like repping this YouTube channel. So this is a YouTube channel called Blue Turtle.
So
the cool thing about Blue Turtle is I think that they have, so they're an illustrator and concept artist. And I think that there's like a loose story happening with each of these background images for all these songs that Blue Turtle picks up from other artists and stuff and compiles them into like a playlist that he feels like fits a certain feeling. Right. And then he has like this central character who's in almost all of the paintings and like visual art that they do for this channel. And there's like this slight, very gentle kind of like almost narrative happening. At least I'm building one. And I think that's meant to happen.
Cool.
But yeah, you should listen to Blue Turtle, and the video specifically for Bookshops and Bone Dust is called.
Did he make it specifically for that?
No, but I made it specifically for it.
Got it. Okay, it's called
Coastal Village by Blue Turtle. Blue Turtle is one of my favorite YouTube channels right now. I listen to that channel constantly when I'm reading and writing.
I wonder how he makes this visual.
Dude, it looks so good. It's so pleasing to the eye.
It looks so good.
I know. I want to make it into like a big poster and put it in my apartment.
The same character that's walking around with the scythe thing
and
the red cape was in the other video that I was watching.
Yeah, there's something going on there.
This is great. Yeah.
So kudos to...
I can see why you think this is perfect for Bookshops and Bone
Dust. I know.
Yeah. That's great.
So good. Anyway.
Oh, in the description, wow, very loose story. The storm has passed. Ithia was back on the road, leaving the quiet village of Lissos behind her.
Yep. Like, it's like, what's going on right now? So cool.
Wow. And it's like, how little of a story can I tell in an hour?
Yeah, I know. Like, barely.
Right, which is cool.
But yeah, I thought Bookshops and Bone Dust was a little bit better than Legends and Lattes because I felt like it just had more of like a specific sense of place. Like I can really see Merc, you know?
I couldn't even tell you the town's name in Legends and Lattes.
Me neither, actually.
Yeah.
Latte.
So I totally agree, actually.
Legendia? No, I'm just kidding. That's not what it's called.
Nice.
Thanks.
I think it was called Coffeebeania.
Coffeebeania.
He tends to find characters or races that are traditionally evil, like Ratkin and orcs, and then makes them have far more depth than the
more.
Like let's attack the wall sort of like orc that we're used to. We're like meat's back on the menu, boys, you know. That's our typical orc like depth, and he really kind of just bucks that trend, and I love it.
Yeah, he's fantastic. I would read 10 more books with Viv set in this world.
We should have him back on.
I'd love to. Yeah.
Yeah.
So easy to
he's
talk
been
to twice now. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Once with just you, and then once I couldn't not hop on because
too.
I had read Legends and Lattes. I was like, I need to talk to him. We should have him back on again. And I don't know if he's, I'm sure he's working on something else.
Yeah,
but
he's just signed with five books, I think, with Tor.
Five books? Is that an imprint of Tor's?
No, he's assigned five books with Tor. Like,
oh, got it. I thought five books was a. imprint of Tor. I was like, ah, that's an interesting name. But I've really been nailing the reading. One from our lovely listeners. Thank you so much for sending me books. It is so encouraging and lovely. And the little notes that you guys include, they just make my day and have a greater effect than you realize. But that was sent to me. I left the book at my mom's house, so I don't have the note that's in there that I use as bookmarks. So I unfortunately can't tell you who sent it to me. But thank you so much for sending it to me. It really means a lot. And I love the book. And then Evan, of course, recommended The Will of the Many on this podcast a few weeks ago. And God, man, you know, that book really... It might be my favorite book that I've read this year.
Yeah, I think it might be mine too so far.
Yeah. Murtag was pretty good, but I need to read Murtag. As good as Will of the Many.
I also want to read The Adventures of Amina El Sarafi pretty soon. That one's definitely very high on the list. Oh, I also picked up this book. I don't know if you've heard of this before. It came out in 2012. It's called Throne of the Crescent Moon by Saladin Ahmed. It's weird because this came out like 12 years ago, and I don't think the sequel's out yet. But I've heard that this first book is like amazing, like really, really, really good. So, and I love the feel of it. It's just like this cute little mass market paperback. It's all flimsy.
Cool. The Adventures of Amina El Sarafi, for anyone wondering, was written by Shannon Chakraborty, who also wrote like City of Brass David and Bad. Kingdom of Copper. And what's that series
David
called?
Bad.
David Bad. There we go. Thank you. I was like, why can't I remember it? Oh, right.
I need to read that book because I think you would like Amina El Sarafi too. I think that's a seafaring book.
Ooh,
yeah,
love that.
I think that's a
yeah. David Bad was, we covered it on this podcast. So if you have any interest in it, you should read it and follow along with the episodes that we did, which were fun. It was, I wouldn't sing tons of praise on it, but it was a very well written series. There were some like character decisions that I was like, that's a little weird, but like overall it was really
but also some really awesome characters, like really good characters. And if I'm saying correctly, I think I liked the second book a lot. The first book was like really cool for a while, and then got weird, and then got really cool again.
The first book would introduce these concepts that are like really cool and special, and then be like, and now here's a whole race that has that thing. And you're like, what? That's not special anymore. And like, it just kept like getting in its own way, I felt like.
I don't know. I think it depends on what you're looking for in a book. Like there's a pretty interesting like approach to romance in those, in that trilogy that had Chad and I talking for so long. We were like, how do we feel about this? We're like still trying to figure out like exactly what we thought about what was going on.
Dude, I was like, I really thought they had like a dad-daughter thing going on. I don't know. By the time we got to romance, it was like,
absolutely didn't.
So weird. Yeah. It like shocked me when they were like, but I feel for you. I was like, wait, really? Because that wasn't what I was picking up at all. And that's what I read. I started watching the season one of Foundation again with my father, which is pretty good. He likes it quite a bit, though not as much as he's liking Shogun, because I showed him that one. I was like, which one should we watch? He was like, Shogun.
I need to watch that. Dude, I'll watch it after I watch Fallout.
It's cool. Yeah, you should. And I think, though I hate to say this because I really like Foundation, but I think I like Shogun a little bit more. I kind of latch onto it.
It's got like 100% on Rotten Tomatoes, dude. It's like,
dude,
a,
it's amazing. Yeah. And my father's really intelligent and likes to understand his stories really well. And reading, watching it again with him, and he'll like pause it. I have to pause it because I know that he like, I can feel his like annoyance sometimes because I'm talking like to comment on stuff. And I can feel he's like, he's never going to like chew me out. He's a nice guy, you know, but like, I can feel he's just like, shut the hell up. You know, so I'll pause it. We'll have commentary, but sometimes he'll pause it and he'll be like, okay, why is this happening? What's the motivation? We'll like figure it out together. Not only is it bonding, it's also really cool to kind of understand it fully, you know?
Yeah. Especially with somebody else there talking you through it. Were you talking
totally? Yeah, and I find that whole culture so interesting. And like
Foundation,
I was looking up stuff and
in Foundation or Shogun.
No. I'm talking about Shogun. Yeah. I like the I just really like the whole like
Foundation guy. It's like an idea.
Feudal Japan thing, you know. And it's loosely based on actual historical events and very loosely based on historical people. I would say the events are more historical than the actual characters, but man, it's. It's super cool. And so if you want to get to know a little bit more about that culture in like the 1600s or something, really interesting period for them, I guess, because I probably know the least about ancient Japan. And that's all I did this week as far as watching stuff and reading stuff. It was a good week, man. I'm really loving the books that I read. Like I said, it's like we have our high moments and our low moments. I know like, I don't know, about a year ago, you were in a little reading slump, you know, and you peaked out pretty fast afterwards. But you're just like, I'm not liking anything that I'm reading that much. And man, I could not love what I'm reading more, with the exception of Alan Carr's, because it just like hits me right in the like you suck button, you know. But that's okay. Sometimes we need to be told that. So go, Alan.
We have one question here from the BRK subreddit, and anybody that wants to ask us a question that we can answer here on the podcast, you can ask that question in the Ask BRK channel in the activities category in the Discord. So this question comes from Foo, and Foo asks, question for the hosts and everyone else, what is your personal hot take? I like this because I had an answer ready, and I think that, so here's the thing with hot takes, everybody. I, at least in my mind, they're supposed to be a little divisive maybe, and might be an opinion that could be a little intense, you know what I mean? And it doesn't,
not a romance,
it doesn't
novel.
Have to be like 100% like super rational, I guess. Or you know what I mean?
It's no,
like,
not at all. In fact, it might even be a cornerstone is like a little bit of irrationality, right. You know, and a lot of our opinions are like
so,
that.
So obviously like hot takes, if you want to list yours in the Discord, go for it. It's kind of like the same rules that applied when we did hot takes, like for an episode of the podcast.
Those were just fun. We did two.
Don't be horrible, please. Like, that's not the point. Like, but I do have.
We can disagree without hate.
I do have a hot take though, and it's not related to books or anything, but this is just how I feel. So I'm going to say, it's not even book related. So this is my hot take. As a person that thinks things, okay? So my hot take is, and I'm not even going to sugarcoat this, okay? If you're on a plane or you're on a bus or you're in any public space and you are annoyed that there's a baby crying or a dog barking or someone having a loud conversation, you fucked up because you didn't bring headphones, okay?
Unless it's a movie theater, man.
Okay, see, this is the thing with hot takes is it's like, yeah, obviously. I just mean, especially for like planes and buses and stuff, like if you're by yourself and you're like traveling or you're in a space that like a lot of people are in and you're annoyed because something is loud, it's your fault because you didn't bring headphones. Like, people can't control their babies crying, like, to a certain extent. Like, babies cry, dogs bark, people have loud conversations sometimes. Headphones are $10, $5. Like,
they're pretty small too.
They're very small. They're super portable. It's 2024. You should have been wearing headphones. Like, I'm sorry. Like, it's like, I just don't have any sympathy for you. Almost every location. Yeah. Obviously there's places where headphones would be frowned upon, or like, you know, there are social lines that get crossed sometimes where you are obviously allowed to get annoyed about things. But I will say that in a lot of cases, if there's loud things happening around you and you're in there too, you should put in some headphones. And the reason I'm like this is because it's like, it literally completely solves the problem. You know what I mean?
Like, really does, and entertains you. Like, why were you not listening to something awesome before?
You can put in headphones, put on YouTube, put on brown noise, turn it up. It's gone, like completely gone.
I agree with you in almost every situation. There's definitely some that I could pick it apart, but I won't do that for the sake of time here. But yeah, I agree. And I also always have headphones on me. Man, I got some Pixel Buds, those earbuds. Yeah. Google's not paying me, but those are the best headphones I have ever received. Yeah, they're so cool, and like they don't ever I forget they're in my ears all the time, and most headphones kind of hurt. You get a little pressure built up there. I can run in them and never fallen out. Like, man, I just love
them. I have a pair of AirPods that I like, the AirPods Pro. I think those are cool. But I also have a pair of the Dre Beats earbuds. The cool thing about Beats is that they hook up to your iPhone like really quickly, really easily.
Dude, so do the buds. Right. I just put them in.
Yep,
boom.
Exactly. So like the Dre Beats buds are pretty cool. They're like $100 or something. I think I got mine for like $70 or something on Amazon Prime deal or something. But yeah, the AirPods are cool. But also, I don't know if anybody else deals with this with AirPods. Please, please, in the Discord, let me know, because I need somebody to complain about this with. But for some reason, whenever I'm wearing AirPods, if I like open a bag of chips or if I like turn on the water or something, it's like magnified, like it's amplified. And I've had like three pairs of AirPods and they all do this. Like, so Chad, next time you call me, I'll put in the AirPods and I'll like try to open something like a bag of chips or something, and it'll be so loud you're gonna want to cry. Like, it's so loud. And I don't know what it is.
Maybe it's trying to adjust for quiet people's voice, because it also does like a mic, you know, for talking on the phone.
It could be user error, totally. Could be a thing that I'm not doing. It should be out of the box, like sounding
possibly
fine. I don't know.
There's like one button that pairs. That's it. That's a weird problem. The Pixel Buds, I know that they do try to, like, if a train goes by and I'm stopped by it or something, and during it'll try to normalize the volume in my ear to stay consistent. So if outside world is really loud, it'll go up a little bit, and it's really cool.
That is interesting.
Don't do that. So much technology put into those things. I really love them a lot.
Should they be in our ears?
Like, are they like giving us head cancer or something?
I don't know. It's like little pieces.
I don't know either, man. And I forget about them all the time. Though I only ever have one in, because I don't like to be disconnected to the outside world. Unless, of course, there's a baby or something, then I throw in the other one.
That sound noise canceling. Yeah. So that's my hot take. And I know that people might disagree with it, but that's why it's a hot take. So let's hear your hot
take. That's why we have a Discord. Go in there and get me. No, I'm just kidding. But do talk and let us know. Okay. My hot take that I thought of on here, while we're just being petty, and like, you know, please, I'm not going to die on this hill. I don't hate you if you do this, but I really don't like it when someone is talking on speakerphone in a grocery store or really just any public place.
Interesting.
Like,
yeah.
Just to stop. I don't want to hear your conversation. Put it up to your ear. Like, I don't know why.
What if two people were talking normally without speakerphone?
That's totally fine.
But they were just both in the store? You'd be fine with that? Because that happens all the time.
Totally, yeah. Yeah, it doesn't make sense.
Well, okay.
It's not like a logical thing.
It's an interesting thing about, I don't know if this is true at all. I just read it on the internet, so whatever. But if it is true, it's interesting that, apparently, and this isn't quite exactly what you're talking about, but apparently the reason that people get annoyed when somebody's next to them on their phone, when they're talking not on speakerphone, which is also annoying to a lot of people. But one of the reasons is that for some reason in our heads, we don't like that we can't hear the other side of the conversation. It's like,
what are they talking about?
It's not necessarily that. It's just like, it's like this incomplete thing that's happening next to you. You know what I mean? It's like
incomplete thing. That's cool. And our brains hate mysteries like that.
Right. Exactly. So it's just like, it's cool. Like you're only hearing half of a conversation. So it doesn't sound right. It sounds weird, you know? And so it just, because it's like, yeah. No, I'm going over. Yeah. No, it's just like, what are you doing?
That's so funny. Everybody else who's trying to fix that problem, I'll just be on speakerphone. I'm like, I hate this. I don't know what it is. I just feel like it's inconsistent.
You should wear
somehow.
Headphones in public, chat.
Dude, I usually do. Because I'm not going to be mad at somebody for they can do whatever they want. It's fine. Don't let me control you. But I definitely judge them a little bit unfairly in my mind. And I don't quite know why. I think it's because I think it's performative.
I mean, some people just
need they're talking
speakerphone.
For me.
You know what I mean? For whatever reason, but I'm sure it's.
Oh, I always use speakerphone, just never in public.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. I cannot stand talking on the phone in the grocery store.
I mean, I guess I would use speakerphone in public if I was outside, you know what I mean? But not in a really crowded place
fine.
Or something. But if I was if I was out on my porch or something, I'd probably put it on speakerphone just like I would. And if my neighbors could hear it, I wouldn't really care. But yeah, like a grocery store, probably not.
Yeah, I feel like it's performative. It's like everyone knows you're having a conversation. Stuff.
What if they're doing FaceTime? They're trying to talk to their significant other, what flavor of ice cream do you want? Here's what.
That wouldn't bug me as
That's
much,
so
actually.
Funny.
It's so it doesn't make any sense, you know? Do you judge people when it's raining and they're complaining about water because they didn't bring an umbrella?
Well,
because you can't prepare for every situation, right? That's the argument to your
You can't ask a Portlander if they judge umbrellas because yes, we all do.
Well, yeah, you're just
you don't use umbrellas.
Not
wear a jacket with a hood.
Everyone. Everyone in Portland is just soaked all the time. Though I lived in Eugene and I never once used an umbrella and I biked multiple miles to work for years.
Great jacket with the hood, man. You're clogging up the sidewalk.
Totally. Dude, umbrellas are kind of a little inconsiderate.
They are really
you know?
Cool, though. It is nice, though, because I understand umbrellas because, and this is coming from someone from Portland, and we, for some reason, all hate umbrellas, but what if you just got a haircut? What if you just, you know what I mean? What if you just got a nice haircut and you're going to a nice place?
You're going to a photo shoot.
What? Use an umbrella, you know?
All right,
I get it.
There's always a good reason to be considerate.
But it does clog up the sidewalk. If two people are walking next to each other on a narrow sidewalk and they each have umbrellas, get out of here. Wear jackets with
hoods. Get out of here. On that note, too, if you do this and just be aware, because I feel people do it because they're excited, but they're not aware. If you go to a concert, especially if you paid $150 or something for the tickets, do not bring a huge sign that's I love you, Drake, because there's people behind you that are a couple rows up that can no longer see Drake because your stupid sign. Anyway, it's not stupid. You're just trying to express yourself. And you're unaware. But man, it's really rude to the people behind you. I've seen fights start because of it, actually.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I always try to I'm lucky because I don't need to be at the very front for a concert. I usually kind of hang back, but I am kind of tall. And so, being over 6 feet in trendy boots, that'll.
But on a tiered seating,
no, just
even your height doesn't matter. There's
no, for sure. Tiered seating, it's not a big deal. But if it's general admission on a flat surface, if I was at the.
Oh, no, tiered seating, it does matter.
What do you mean?
Because the people right to above are the perfect
over the sign
to not
sign.
See
no,
through the
yeah.
sign.
But I'm talking about just being tall in general at a show.
Oh, just being tall. Yeah. I have big hair, so I feel bad at movies. Yeah, no, I get
yeah,
you.
Yeah, I try to stay aware of people behind me at concerts because it's they paid the same amount as me. They want to see what's going on. And I can see no matter where I am. So it's there's a certain etiquette, I feel with the general admission concerts where it's if you're over 6 feet, don't stand in front of somebody that's 5'5". They just don't.
Or acknowledge it and put in front of them. Put them in front of you. Be like, hey, do you want to stand in front of me? Because
I've
I don't
before,
totally
too.
See over. Yeah. I've done that before. I was once at a concert. And you know how there's always the girl on someone's shoulders and that seems like awesome. Well, me and my buddy were like, dude, I want that experience. I was like, do you think that we're strong enough to like do that for a few minutes to each other? He's like, yeah, dude, let's do it. And so it was Dylan, and we traded off being on each other's shoulders. It is the best way to watch a concert, because you like make eye contact multiple times with the artist because they see you, and it's the sea of heads. You could just get such a just a better experience. It's so awesome.
I'll do that for you if we ever go to a concert.
Dude, I'll do it for you, but I'm probably not going to be able to get more than like 2 minutes in there, but we'll see. Maybe I can.
Pretty hefty,
and that's a statement
dude.
Of my leg strength, not your weight. Evan's solid muscle. And muscle's heavier than fat, so, you know, this is a compliment, actually.
I don't know. I don't feel like solid muscle.
Oh, that's funny.
I look good in a pair of shorts, let me tell you.
I have, if we're amenable. I know we're pretty long here, but hey, let's do it. I'm here for it. If you are, I have a fun fact that I wanted to throw out there. I want your amenableness.
I am amenable to your fun fact.
Excellent. Cool. I can't do anything without permission. All right. So this is really, really interesting that because there are margins in books, right? And it's always like, this seems like kind of waste of a paper. If you just like added up all the margins in the world, there's thousands of miles of wasted paper. So notebook margins were invented so rats wouldn't bite through important notes.
I love that.
Right. So notebook margins are often considered a design choice. But did you know they have a practical purpose? The original reason for adding margins to writing paper was to protect your work from rodents, specifically rats. In the past, rats were a common household pest and would often nibble on paper, ruining important documents or notes. But who's not tempted from time to time to read to eat a good book? By adding wider margins, the paper was protected from the rats as they would start chewing through the edges first. Isn't that crazy?
That's really interesting, too, because like sometimes I'm like kind of over
eating the book a little bit.
Yeah. sometimes I'm like overly critical of like font size and font choice and margins and stuff with books that I'm reading.
It's like a huge margin is ridiculous.
But like also it's funny because if margins had never existed, I would never really care. But like if I do see a book that it's got, it's like words are like right up against the edge, you know, I'm like, ugh.
It's intimidating.
This is disgusting. Like this is going to take me forever to read, even though it's the exact same.
Totally.
But like Priory of the Orange Tree has really big margins. Like they're thick margins. That's why that book
is
so
crazy,
big.
Cause like that book is long.
I think
enough.
That they did it on
why?
Purpose. And this is just my theory.
Double down.
I could be, this is my tinfoil hat theory. I think that Bloomsbury was like, you know what we should do? This is already a really cool cover. Let's make this book huge. Like, let's make this book, we'll get thick paper and we'll squeeze the margins. We'll make the text a little bit bigger and we'll just have this be like this 850 page book. That's really the word count is only like a 600 page book. They like tacked on a couple hundred extra pages by messing with the margins and making the, and it's like, dude, if you see Priory of the Orange Tree at a bookstore, your eyes just go straight to that book because it's this big giant orange book.
It commands your attention.
I think I got something there. It's also a really good book. I mean, there's a reason why it's sold so
much,
but like, it really stands out.
Dude, I like that, actually. I think that's some good psychology. And in fact, that's a teaser for next week because my fun fact will be about the largest book ever published, which is pretty cool, too. So make sure you stick around for the next fun fact because it's a life changer, not at all.
My life has already changed.
Dude, from the margin thing, I know. So cool.
Consider it changed.
That one was on par with the chaining books to the shelf one, which I thought was so interesting,
too, for sure.
Yeah, it's cool to see and to know that some of the things that we may consider to be useless actually had a logical purpose when they started, you know, like it wasn't just like a stylistic choice or someone trying to milk it. It wasn't a high schooler trying to make it, you know, not like 2.3 line width, you know, like spaced font or whatever.
A little fun fact for anybody that's writing papers out there, if you're in college or high school or anything.
Ooh, a freebie.
This is kind of going along the same lines of us encouraging people to use AI to do their homework, but which is like half encouragement. I mean, you should learn what you're doing. Anyway.
But not to write your stories.
Maybe teachers out there listening will be annoyed that I said this, but
we have a lot of teachers to listen to this podcast.
Did you know that if you have a word count assignment and they say like you need to give me 5,000 words on this, if you write like 4,700 something and you're done, what you can do is you can write a bunch of nonsense words and then highlight them and turn the text white.
Oh my goodness. That is so crafty.
I have totally gotten away with that. No, granted that was in like 2009, but like
that's smart enough to be like awarded, you know. Like, you won. You won. Dude, that's so
It'll
smart.
Only work, though, if you're, like, close, right? Obviously, it won't work if you're supposed to write 5,000 words and you write half a page and then you do the rest in white text, like, obviously.
Will the computer recognize somehow that it's got those extra
words? That's the thing,
words?
Is, like, I did it in, like, 2009 and, like, on, like, Windows 8.7 or whatever the school was using, you know what I mean? So I was able to squeeze it past a couple of teachers, which I was really stoked about, because I had read it on, like, I wasn't even on Reddit or something. It was, like, Facebook or something that, like, somebody had written to try it out. But yeah, I don't even know if it would work today. And I don't even know if I was just getting lucky, you know, like,
someone try it and let us know.
Teachers, please let us know if that would fly.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Not students. Teachers. Not students. Teachers, let us know.
We do not recommend you cheating in any way on your homework, everybody.
No, definitely not. Though, I do think, I don't really like the word count thing, right? Because, like, why am I being punished? If I can the point across in 300 words, why should I take 4,000 up? That's just wasted space, you know?
Scene from The Office where Michael's like, Jim is not a very hard worker. He can spend an hour on something and it'll take me the whole day.
Exactly my point.
Anyway,
lovely bit of education.
Let's get out of here, everybody. Thank you so much for listening to this episode. Thank you for listening to the podcast. Really appreciate you sticking around, and look out for some episodes coming up soon. Hopefully have a Throne of Glass episode up for you this week. Yeah, but until then, look out for the next Monday episode, which will come out next Monday. Hopefully, probably.
Go ahead up that Discord, ask us questions. Yeah. That's fun.
Get up the social media pages. The Patreon helps quite a bit for all of this production, everybody. But until next time, hope you have an amazing rest of your day, and happy reading.
Bye, everybody.